Welcome to the Nova Scotia Artist Spotlight, presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust on CIOE. I'm your host, Bree McKinnon, a songwriter, pianist, and former Talent Trust Award recipient. For this series, we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Talent Trust by interviewing some of the amazing, groundbreaking artists that we've supported here in Nova Scotia. You can listen on 97.5 or streaming worldwide online at www.communityradio.ca. Today I'm speaking with Marcel D'Entremont, a former Nova Scotia Talent Trust Portia White Award recipient, as well as the recent winner of the Worth Vocal Prize. He just finished a graduate artist diploma in music at McGill University and has performed across Canada while garnering praise for his skills as a tenor soloist, in addition to roles such as Romeo in Jeunesse Musicale du Canada's production of Romeo and Juliet. Marcel, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, first of all, congrats on the Worth Vocal Prize. That is a huge award, and I read that it's a $25,000 cash prize. So tell me how that came about and how you won that competition.
Thank you. Yeah, this competition is available only for McGill University students, and the students who are eligible have to have already completed a year of studies at McGill University. So last year I did an artist diploma. It's very similar to the one I just completed, but it was a different artist diploma. So that was my qualifying year essentially for the prize. And this year you get nominated in the first month of school. So my teacher nominated me for this prize. And so there were 10 students that would make it through to the next round, which is a live audition round, which happened in, I think, the end of September. And so 10 students presented a program that I think was about 25 minutes, and the entire voice faculty was there. They would choose 15 minutes of your program that you'd perform for them. And from there, they chose four finalists to present on the night in November. And we all sang our full 25-minute programs in front of the panel, which was both internal faculty and external people that they brought in to judge this. And then at the end of the night, they choose one winner. And I guess that was me this year.
Wow, that sounds incredible. I know as an artist, like, it has huge ups and downs. So receiving an award like this must just be such a nice validation to show that you're on the right path and being recognized by your peers. That must feel amazing.
That's very true. It's also really nice to be nominated and recognized by the faculty in McGill, because they are people that I work closely with. So it's nice to know that they supported me as well to get to the final round. But yes, definitely something like this is really a life-changing amount of money, and just a really, really nice recognition to show that you're kind of going in the right path when it doesn't always feel like you are.
Definitely. I think that's the case with every artist. The things just come along at the right time when they're supposed to.
Exactly.
I understand, I was browsing through the requirements online, that you had to choose some pieces with a minimum of three different languages, including an aria. So what was your favorite piece you performed, and how did you go about choosing the pieces?
Well, actually, I chose the pieces very much with my teacher. Her name is Joanne Colomayets. She's a Canadian soprano. And we, once I got nominated and we knew that I was going to have to perform and choose this this program, we really worked together. And what we really wanted to do was find a program that was quite diverse, but also kind of had some sort of coherence. So we didn't want to have too many songs. We didn't want to have too many arias. So we really thought about, you know, what showcases my voice the best, what showcases the things that I think I do well the best, and also what kind of like programming you want so that you have not too many big things at the end, but also don't give it all away at the beginning so that you kind of have a peak in the middle and then come away a little bit so you're not finishing the program totally exhausted and trying to pull out your biggest aria. So it was actually quite a process, to be honest, to figure out exactly what I was going to sing and to try to find an order in which I felt that I'd be comfortable doing it. And we did quite a number of practice, like run-throughs before the actual competition. So I did feel quite confident in the music by the time I got to that point.
Oh, well, it sounds like it was worth all of the practice and the preparation.
Yes, no doubt. It was, I will say also, like, without a doubt, the most stressful day of my life. I remember the whole day of the competition, just feeling like kind of sick to my stomach the entire way through, because it's such a humongous amount of money. And if you don't win the prize, everyone just gets $1,000. So it's kind of all or nothing. And I just remember feeling like so stressed out about this big opportunity, which again, in some ways, you know, is not really what music should be about. I think, but in this particular case, you know, that's where I was and that's what I was doing. And I guess I had to prepare the best that I could for that, but it was definitely very stressful also.
Oh, congratulations. It's so great.
Thank
that you.
You
won. So tell me, how did you get into singing growing up in Marigamish, Nova Scotia?
Yeah, there's not a huge classical music scene in Marigamish, but I had started piano lessons from quite a young age. So I've been playing piano and new music. And actually it was my elementary school music teacher, Karen McLean, who really was trying to convince me to follow singing and to just take some lessons and really encourage my parents to put me in lessons. And it wasn't until grade nine, I think, that I started actually having voice lessons with Monica George Punky in New Glasgow. And really it was Monica's support and encouragement that made me want to do this at university. And it seemed to me like it was something that kept coming relatively naturally. And I couldn't think of other things that I liked more than singing and music. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I'll give this a shot as an undergraduate and see what happens. And from there, again, things just kind of kept going well. And I felt like I was doing a good job. So I kind of just kept following it. And I mean, even today, there are times I think, is this really what I want to do with my life? Like, this is a really stressful career. But, you know, I really do love it very much. And yeah, it just kind of like happened because I just kept following this because I didn't know what else I liked to do more. Mm. And I guess here I am.
Yeah, I think a lot of artists can relate to that. If there was something more sensible that they like to do, they'd probably be doing that. But
yeah, exactly. I would be.
Yeah. So was there much of a music scene there at that part of rural Nova Scotia when you were growing up, or was it more of in school that you started to feel connected to music in that way?
Yeah, it was definitely more in school for me. There's not much music going on. I shouldn't say that, actually. There are like musical things going on, but I really wasn't a part of it in any way growing up. And there are certainly many people in that community who are very musical. Like Doris Mason is from close to where I'm from. And there is a lot of music going on around there, but I really just wasn't a part of it because my family was not big into music growing up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was really high school where I really realized like I loved this, because suddenly I was at North Nova Education Center and I had Janice Alcorn helping me with choir and encouraging me to do musical theater. And I had Andrew Alcorn and Joel Pratt helping me with band and helping me with musicals. And I suddenly found myself just kind of like immersed in a musical world and really felt like I was thriving there.
Mm, yeah, it's a good education is so important when it comes to music.
Yes.
The Alcorns are amazing people. So
yes, and I think they both have just retired. Shout out to them because they're retiring from North Nova and they deserve it because they worked so hard to get the music program to where it is in North Nova. And really, it's exceptional at that school.
So do you remember how you first heard about the Nova Scotia Talent Trust?
Yes, I was a student at Acadia University, and I was studying with Christiane Rushton there. And I remember really wanting to continue having voice lessons for the summer. And she had been talking to me about Jason Davis. And I'd also worked with Jason's wife, Lucy, at Acadia for a little bit. And I really wanted to have lessons with him. And Christiane thought that was a good idea, as similar voice types. And so I remember her saying, you know, there's a Nova Scotia Talent Trust that you can apply to get money to do these sort of things, both in the summer and during the school year. And so that was the first time, I guess, that I applied for the Talent Trust.
Cool. Well, congrats on the Portia White Award as well. I know that's a big honor.
Thank you. Yeah, that was very exciting for me to receive. And to be honest, I didn't really, like, I just didn't know enough about the Talent Trust at the time. And I didn't quite realize that there were these special prizes that you could win. And so I was very surprised when I found out that I was getting that prize.
Nice. Well, I'm going to play a piece of music here quickly. So I know you chose I've Bought Me a Cat by Aaron Copland as a piece that inspires you. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Sure. So this song is one that I've sung a lot of times. And in fact, people in New Glasgow may wish that they'd never hear me sing it again because I've done it many times there. But this is a song by American composer Aaron Copland, as you said, and it's a traditional American folk song. And basically the premise of the song is that you start with a cat and then you add a duck and a goose and a hen and so on. And you're kind of going on and the song gets more and more, or adds more and more animals to it. And you're kind of trying to imitate the sounds of the animals that you're singing about. So this song is really like, it's quite foolish. It's quite silly. And I really feel like it's something that like I can really connect to just because it's fun. And it's kind of like really easy to listen to and it's lighthearted. And this is a song that I actually did as the finishing song. It closed my program for the Worth competition. And when we were choosing the repertoire, my teacher was like, you absolutely cannot end this competition with this song. And I thought, you know, like I have such a serious program and so much of the other music is really intense. And, you know, one way to end a program is with something really big and dramatic. And I thought, you know, I just think I'm going to end with something like really lighthearted, but still also like quite interesting in the fact that it's not just like singing as beautifully as you can. It's trying to manipulate your voice to make a whole bunch of different sounds. So this is, yeah, a song that is quite important to me. And I've done it for a couple of really big competitions and had a fair amount of success with it.
Oh, great. Well, let's have a listen. I'm very excited. This is Aaron Copland's I've Bought Me a Cat.
I bought me a cat. My cat pleased me. I fed my cat under yonder tree. My cat says fiddle-a-fee. I bought me a duck. My duck pleased me. I fed my duck under yonder tree. My duck says quack, quack. My cat says fiddle-a-fee. I bought me a goose, my goose pleased me. I fed my goose under yonder tree. My goose says claw, claw. My duck says quack, quack. My cat says fiddle-a-fee. I bought me a hen, my hen pleased me. I fed my hen under yonder tree. My hen says shimmy-shack, shimmy-shack. My goose says claw, claw. My duck says quack, quack. My cat says fiddle-a-fee. I bought me a pig, my pig pleased me. I fed my pig under yonder tree. My pig says griffy, griffy. My hen says shimmy-shack, shimmy-shack. My goose says quaw, quaw. My duck says quack, quack. My cat says fiddle-a-fee. I bought me a cow, my cow pleased me. I fed my cow under yonder tree. My cow says moo, moo. My pig says griffy, griffy. My hen says shimmy-shack, shimmy-shack. My goose says quaw, quaw. My duck says quack, quack. My cat says fiddle-a-fee. I bought me a horse, my horse pleased me. I fed my horse under yonder tree. My horse said neigh, neigh. My cow said moo, moo. My pig says griffy, griffy. My hen says shimmy-shack, shimmy-shack. My goose says quaw, quaw. My duck says quack, quack. My cat says fiddle-a-fee. I bought me a wife, my wife pleased me. I fed my wife under yonder tree. My wife says, honey, honey. My horse said, nay, nay. My cow said, moo, moo. My pig says, griffy, griffy. My hen says, shimmy, shack, shimmy, shack. My goose says, quaw, quaw. My duck says, quack, quack. My cat says, fiddle-a-fee.
Welcome back to the Artist Spotlight. I'm Bree McKinnon, and today I'm speaking with Marcel D'Entremont, the amazing tenor from Marigamish, Nova Scotia. So Marcel, I know you did some touring around Canada with the Jeunesse Musicale de Canada. Can you tell me a little bit about those productions?
Sure. So I have done two tours with Jeunesse Musicale. The first one was Romeo and Juliet, and the second one was La Traviata. So with these productions, I think the format has changed now, but at that time, you would spend 2 weeks in Orford, Quebec, doing the staging and music rehearsals of these productions. And then from there, you would do what they call the Western and Eastern tours. The Western tours really stayed within Quebec largely and went a little bit into Ontario. And then the Eastern tours would go in Quebec and all the way over to New Brunswick, Nova Scotia. And I guess, yeah, we even did some in PEI. So those tours can last up to, I think, about 40 days. So, you know, you're on the road constantly, you're driving almost every day or every other day. It really is quite intense. But by the end of that time, you know, I've done the roles 25, 30 times. So you really feel like you've sunk into that music and really gotten to know it very well.
Interesting. And I understand that that organization brings a lot of opera to smaller communities or places where they might not get a lot of classical music. What was that like playing operas in these smaller towns and cities?
Yeah, this is definitely a big part of the mandate for JMZ in that they're trying to not, they're kind of avoiding the big central hubs in some ways, and they're not trying to play at all with the largest theaters. And in fact, I think this is kind of refreshing in many ways because you have communities that are really quite far removed from any large cities, and they don't get classical music. And in fact, they don't get a lot of public performances at all. So really, some of these communities, I was quite shocked by how many people showed up and how much they enjoyed it. And I think it's just, again, it's just, you know, it proves the fact that music is kind of a universal language if people are able to actually get out and see it. And sometimes, you know, really, it's not very accessible to go to the COC or the Opéra de Montréal. So I think it's great to have this company kind of demanding that we bring classical music to places that may not be able to see it otherwise. So yeah, I think it's a great idea for a touring opera company to do this.
And I guess that proves the point that a good story and good music stands the test of time. Obviously, these operas are classic for a reason, and you know, you could relate to them 100 years ago or 50 years ago or today.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. And I think that Romeo and Juliet especially is something that, even though it is that opera was in French, and I should say that most of the audiences we were going to were fluent in French, even if you didn't understand French, like this opera, the story is just so well known that you really didn't need to understand all the words to understand what's going on. And like you said, La Traviata is, you know, really one of the top 10 most performed operas in the world, and very, very popular. The music is really great. And it was not hard for audiences to enjoy something like that.
So speaking of really great operatic roles, now that you've done Romeo, are there any other roles on your bucket list that you kind of are waiting and dying to perform someday?
I would say that there's not a role that I'm like really dying to perform that I haven't done. I'm sure there are lots of opera roles that I haven't really had the chance to listen to enough to know if I want to do it or not. But I will say that Edgardo from Lucia de Lammermoor is one that I did as a student at McGill in their production. And I will say that at the time that I did it, it felt quite ambitious, and we did have to make some cuts just that I could make it through the role. In fact, we had to cut just little pieces here and there throughout the opera because it is so demanding. But I would say that that's a role that I'd really love to revisit, because as hard as it was, I really felt like it sat nicely in my voice, and it was kind of the music that I really feel like I can sink my teeth into. So I would really love the chance to do Edgardo again at some point in the perhaps not so distant future.
So who composed that opera?
That's Donizetti.
Oh, wow. Cool. So what's next for you, Marcel? Do you have any concerts coming up, or are you heading home at all this summer for any shows?
I do have something coming up, although it's not going to be in Nova Scotia. I'm going to be doing a tour of La Boheme with Against the Grain Theatre. They're an opera theatre based out of Toronto, by Joel Ivany. And so he kind of has a cool company that tries to do opera in a non-traditional way, again, Against the Grain, as their name suggests. So we're going to start in Banff, Alberta, and we will stage and do the music rehearsals there, and then drive our way across the country to Toronto. And there are dates and locations available on their website. And basically, it's going to be all done in pubs and legions and bars. So again, I think in this way, it's kind of how can we break the model of this opera being something that's like super elitist and perhaps quite inaccessible for a lot of people. And bring it to, you know, a place where anyone can find themselves, you know, a pub or a bar or a legion. So that'll be happening from September 16th to October 25th. We end in Toronto and do quite a number of shows in Toronto. But that's certainly the biggest thing on my horizon right now.
Wow, that sounds so cool. I'd love to catch that if I'm going to be in that neck of the woods during the fall.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really, I think it's going to be exciting and certainly challenging for me. Because again, an opera tour is fun, but like driving and then singing and then driving and then singing is certainly demanding as well. So
how do you do that? Is there a lot of warming up on the highway in the van or what?
I will say that there's actually not as much warming up in the van. Generally, the van is when I'm trying to get a little more sleep because we're usually leaving early. But I would say that, yeah, like keeping yourself healthy and keeping your voice healthy is the most important thing during something like that. So really getting enough sleep is important. Keeping very hydrated, because if you're driving for a long time, you could just kind of forget about drinking water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if you're in a bar or a pub, avoiding alcohol is probably a very good idea while you're doing this sort of thing.
All good pieces of advice. Well, one more question on the advice line here. So if you were speaking with young Nova Scotian artists who are really involved in the arts and want to pursue it as a career, what would you say as they are starting out in their careers?
I would say something that I've said, I think, a few times is that you don't need to be singing at the COC or at the Met or at major opera houses to be successful in having a career in music. And something that I've been thinking a lot of and do encourage other people to think of is, what is your version of success? And what does success mean to you? You know, success really can be something as simple as making enough money to live and being happy. And I think that if you set your goals too lofty and too high and that I'll only ever be happy if I sing at the Met, that it's very easy to get discouraged and disappointed and to give up, because that's a very difficult thing to do. But I think that aiming for your version of success and finding what will make you happy in a career of music is something that is going to make your goals more attainable. And also something that will leave you feeling perhaps better as a person and not feeling like you're constantly disappointed in yourself. So really, you know, what is it going to take to make you happy and to make you feel artistically fulfilled and making sure that those goals are within your reach?
That's really sage advice, Marcel. So we're going to play one last piece of music, a little bit of Schumann. Can you tell us a little bit about this song or song series?
Sure. So this is from Schumann's song cycle, Dich zu Liebe. This is the seventh song. It's called Ich grolle nicht. And Schumann's Dich zu Liebe was composed in the year that he composed a whole bunch of songs. It's known as his Year of Song. And this cycle is telling the story of a young man who falls in love with a woman and quickly realizes that she perhaps does not love him in the way that he loved her. And she gets married to someone else. And he kind of has to go through the process of dealing with that. And he kind of, I think, in the end, goes a little bit off the rails and talks about how he's going to need all these coffins that are going to be absolutely colossal so that he can throw all his pain and hurt into it and throw it to the bottom of the sea. And this cycle is one that I did at the National Music Festival when I was in Kelowna, BC. And I've performed this quite a few times. I performed it at the concert I did at Chapelle Historique de Bon Pasteur in Montreal as part of the prize for winning the Worth competition. And this is just a cycle that I've kind of done over and over and come back to. And every time I relook at this music, I feel like I'm discovering new things that I've missed in the past or finding new ways to interpret the text. And it's probably my favorite piece of classical music and something that I just think really, really speaks to me. I'm not exactly sure why, but this music really speaks to me and really has a very personal place for me.
Well, let's have a listen. Marcel, thank you so much for hopping on the phone today. Congratulations on the Vocal Prize and good luck with the touring in the fall. It was really great speaking with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Ich grolle nicht, und wenn das Herz auch bricht, ewig verlorenes Lieb, ewig verlorenes Lieb. Ich grolle nicht, ich grolle nicht.
Diamanten pracht. Es fällt kein Strahl in deines Herzens Nacht. Das weiß ich längst. Ich grolle nicht, und wenn das Herz auch bricht, ich sah dich ja im Traume und sah die Nacht in deines Herzens Raume und sah die Schlamm, die dir am Herzen frisst. Ich sah, mein Lieb, wie sehr du elend bist. Ich grolle nicht, ich grolle nicht.
Today, I'm speaking with Gina Burgess, an accomplished performer, visual artist, teacher, and former Talent Trust recipient. From her classical violin training to 4 ECMA awards with the Gypsy Jazz Ensemble Gypsophilia and a Juno nomination with the Iqaluit-based Arctic rock band, the Jerry Cans, Gina is an incredibly diverse artist who has collaborated with everyone from Hey Rosetta to Kanye West to Symphony Nova Scotia. So I'm so excited to be speaking with her. Gina, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. I'm so happy we could finally connect. I know you're busy on the road this summer.
Yeah, me too.
So first of all, I know you've been playing violin since you were pretty young. So do you remember what your first musical memory was?
I absolutely do. It's actually what got me into wanting to play the violin. I was 3 years old and I saw my dad's parents playing Beethoven trio. So my grandmother was on cello, my grandfather was on piano, and the girl named Gina was playing violin. And they were playing Beethoven trios.
Wow. So that obviously left a big impression on you.
Yeah. I mean, the girl playing violin had my same name. and I loved the sound of the music. So I knew I wanted to do that.
Wow. So then you started studying violin and playing when you were a kid in elementary school?
Yeah, I started when I was 5. I actually begged for a violin from like when I was 3. And then finally, my parents and grandparents got me a violin when I was 5. And I started my lessons at the Maritime Conservatory.
Oh, amazing. So when do you think you realized that music was what you wanted to do, what you wanted to make your career out of it?
Oh, I knew when I was 3.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's crazy.
I just knew it. Yes. And I was lucky enough to get my young Joy Yoon as my first teacher. Hmm. And she recognized that. And she worked so well with children and just like fostered my love of music and encouraged me to branch out. Like when I was 9 years old, my folks went on a camping trip in Cape Breton and they brought me back some Cape Breton fiddle books. Hmm. And I could read music. So I started reading those tunes and then I started listening to how people played them on the island. And it kind of got me into some Celtic stuff at a young age too. So that was really, really cool.
So I know music education is a passion of yours as well, and you've done teaching all across Canada. So is that what brought you up north to Nunavut and Iqaluit up that way for the first time?
It is, actually. There was an exchange between the Maritime Conservatory Orchestra and the Iqaluit Fiddle Ensemble. It was really cool, actually. I didn't know that I was going to be teaching when I got up there. I thought I was just chaperoning. So I actually didn't bring like any of my teaching materials or books or anything like that. And it was the first time that I learned that you don't need any of that to teach. So that was pretty eye-opening too.
Play it by ear.
Yeah, literally.
So is that where the Jerry Cans kind of started? Was that kind of the birthplace of that group?
Well, so when I went up there on that exchange, I was actually billeted with the lead singer's mother. And at that time, he was at Trent and he was starting up music camps in more remote communities in Nunavut, in Panaktu and in Iqaluit. And he was looking for a fiddle instructor, actually. So his mom hooked me up with him. And then he, Nancy, our throat singer, and I, we did those music camps for about 5 years. And every time I went up to do those music camps, I was just jamming with them, and also Andrew, Steve, and Dote, the bass and drum player, they've been playing music together since they were in elementary. And so they were already kind of doing music and band work. So every time I went up, I would just jam with them, and we would play at the Legion, and we would play in all different spaces. And then finally, we all just said, you know, this is, there's something here. Why don't we actually do this? And that's when the band was formed.
How long have you guys been together now?
About 7 years.
7 years, wow. So you guys have been touring pretty extensively, I know. What's your favorite place you've ever visited while on tour?
Oh, man, so many. Like, this globe is an incredible place. Mm-hmm. Incredibly awful and incredibly beautiful all at the same time. But I think some of my favorite places, I love Greenland. I love going to Nuuk. So I'm hoping to do a project there with some circus artists, actually, next year.
Wow.
And Cuba was cool. New Zealand, everywhere. It's just awesome.
That's incredible.
I couldn't pick.
Wow. Yeah, you get to see a lot of places that you probably would never have had the opportunity to visit otherwise.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Especially, I mean, when we do tour, because, you know, we're all pretty passionate about youth work in our own ways. Mm-hmm. So we try to tack that on as much as possible. And for example, when we did tour Australia, we got to work with some incredible youth, Indigenous youth, behind Ayers Rock. And up outside of Darwin, and these are fly-in communities. I mean, the community outside of Darwin, we had to get special permission to even go in there as white foreigners, you know, to go in there and work with these people. And what an incredibly life-changing experience it was. And actually to notice the similarities between their communities there and communities up in Nunavut is super fascinating. I mean, they're the two most challenging climates on this planet to live in, you know, the extreme heat and the extreme cold, and to see how humans adapt and create in those environments is incredible.
So speaking of your collaborations, I know you recently were part of organizing the MCPA Iqaluit Fiddle Ensemble Exchange here in Halifax. So can you tell me a little bit about that project?
Yeah, so because it was the exchange that got me up there the first time, Pat Wyman, who actually passed a few years back, it was her passion to do these exchanges with Darlene Nukinga, who's actually from Windsor, Nova Scotia, like myself, but now lives in Iqaluit. And she was the one that started the fiddle ensemble there, I think in the 80s she started up. Actually, some of the jerry cans started violin with Darlene when they were little kids. So when Pat asked if I would facilitate another one, of course, I wanted to do that. I was pretty busy at that time. Actually, it was when the band went and toured Australia. So a lot of other people stepped in to make that happen. Other teachers at the conservatory, Susanna Brown and Debbie, and lots of other people helped to make that happen. But we were able to do it a second time, and there's even talks about perhaps doing it again. So we'll see.
Oh, cool. Congratulations. Sounds like a really cool
Thanks.
Project.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a piece of music quickly here. We're going to play Nearly by the Jerry Cans. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Gina?
Yeah. So Nearly means geese in Inuktitut. So the Jerry Cans, we sing mostly in Inuktitut, which is the language of Inuit people all across the circumpolar. And we do some songs in English as well, but, you know, all the members of the band, except for myself, are from Iqaluit, from Nunavut and Pannaktu. And so that's the prevalent language. And we want to, you know, pay respects to that tradition and also encourage youth to speak their language, whatever that is. So, yeah, Nearlit is Inuktitut for geese. And the goose is actually a traditional Inuit throat singing song, except where... in this case, I actually take on the part of the second throat singer on my violin. So the parts are going together as a traditional Inuit throat singing song would, except one part is now violin.
Wow. Okay, let's check this out. Nearly by the Jerry Cans. Oh, Welcome back. I'm Bria McKinnon with the Nova Scotia Talent Trust Artist Spotlight. I'm chatting with Gina Burgess today, and that was Nearly by the Jerry Cans. So Gina, I know you're working on a solo project as well. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I am. Actually, I'm pretty excited. I've been writing music and different compositions for many years now, lots of years, but it's kind of been on the back burner, you know, with my work with Gypsophilia and the Jerry Cans. I haven't had a lot of time, but I finally recorded my first solo album. We're almost done. We have two more overdub sessions. And yeah, they're all original compositions. The lineup on this album is bass, drums, violin, and throat singer. And yeah, I'm pretty excited to get it out there into the world.
Cool. So when do you think that project will come out?
No idea, actually.
Finish
it's
your first.
It's kind of the way it works with, yeah, funding and trying to find a time. I know the Jerry Cans, we're going to release a new album. We also just finished recording, and I think we're going to do that early 2020. So I want to put energy into that one, and then I'll release my album after that.
So
maybe 2021?
Great. Okay. So between all your band collaborations over the past few years, did you find there was any challenges that came from working on a solo project and doing all the composing, arranging, recording all yourself?
I'm pretty good with just like going with the flow. Mm. So when I have free time, that's when I use it for my compositions. And I feel like when you allow things, they unfold in their own time, you know, like nothing's really mine anyway. So I'm just rolling with it and just happy to be a part of the creative vibe, the creative energy when it's present, you know. So when it's there, I try to ride that and see what happens.
There's probably a nice amount of freedom that comes with doing a solo project after all these years.
Yes, and to be able to move at my own pace, and I have no rush with it. So sometimes I think, oh my goodness, you know, these songs are going to be 5 years old, but you know, I've only played 3 concerts. So it's not boring to me or old yet in that kind of a way, you know. It's still really fresh and I still really enjoy playing it when I get the chance to do that with my band.
So at the break, we were talking a little bit about how you've been influenced by the in your tradition of throat singing and how you've kind of been incorporating that into your composition. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been going up to the Arctic for 10 years this year, and I have always loved Inuit throat singing, even before I started going up there. But I got to be a little more steeped in the tradition and learn the songs, and been so blessed to be able to hear incredible throat singers from all over the Arctic. So they've inspired my own compositional style, especially on the album that I just recorded. Most of those pieces are based off the idea of Inuit throat singing, which traditionally is 2 Inuk women. One is a leader, so she's creating sounds. Often these sounds imitate nature. And then the second woman is a follower, and she's copying those sounds a split second after the first person. So it's a game. The leader is trying to kind of trip up the follower, and often it ends in laughter, you know, because it's fun. It's not super competitive. It's for fun. It's the pastime. So what I did was I'll have an instrument, the violin, being the leader, and then I'll write a part that completely copies that part, either on another instrument or I'll loop it and I'll play it on my violin, so that you have the 2 parts interacting as if they're 2 throat singers, but they're 2 melodic instruments instead.
Wow. That's so interesting. From classical violin to throat singing to gypsy jazz, you're such a versatile artist. I love it.
Thanks. It's pretty crazy, but it works.
So to switch gears a little bit about another collaboration, but I have to ask, when did you collaborate with Kanye West? And please tell me about that project.
I don't know what the year was now. It was a few years back. But it's when Kanye came to play on the Halifax Commons. And it was a really big show. Also, the Rolling Stones were there, which was incredible. Sloan, Alice Cooper. I think there was another band. But anyway, so there was a hired group, a string quartet and a harp player, and we all played on Kanye's Gold Digger. That's the album, actually, that we covered. Yeah, it was pretty incredible.
That must have been absolutely amazing. Did you see that coming when you were starting to play violin and getting serious about music, that you'd be collaborating with that?
Oh, God, no. Like, no, someday? Definitely not.
Yeah, you never know what's coming down the pipe, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, that's the excitement of life.
On top of music, I know you've been doing some really amazing visual art as well. I saw some leather work and bead work on your website. When did you start making your own pieces?
I've beaded since I was a little kid, actually. I grew up in Spryfield, and I spent a lot of time at the playground. And so we would have these people, volunteers, come in and work with the kids at the playground, and they would bring beads and paints and just to keep us occupied, you know, in the summer. And so I think I was 7 or 8. I really took to the beating that the girl brought one time. But it wasn't until I went to U of T, I think it was in 2006 or 2007, and I met my teacher, Mary Fox, and she's an Ojibwe woman, incredible, incredible beater artist. And she taught me the proper way to do it. So our first session together, actually, I was so excited and proud to show her this really massive piece that took me months and months and months to make. And her reaction was very bad. We must take it apart and start again. It's like, what? And she said, I will help you. And then she cut off the first bead. I thought, oh, man, it took us 4.5 hours to cut all the beads off that. And then she said, next week, we start again. And we did. And we started proper. She taught me how to properly thread the needle and fit the beads and do all of that. And what an incredible way to teach not only crafting and artwork, but she taught me, you know, how to live well, how to be present in the moment, how to appreciate our bodies. She actually has advanced Parkinson's now. So she recently gifted me all of her beads. And that's a very, very special gift for me. So, yeah, it was incredible to spend time with her. And actually, that helped me to get up to Iqaluit. I know when Pat was thinking about who to take up to Nunavut, she thought that I would like to go because of the crafting, the seal skin sewing and the beadwork that is happening up there.
Wow. So your pieces are so beautiful. I was really, really impressed when I was looking at your website. Are they for sale?
Thank you. You know, I don't actually have much free time anymore. I used to sell some of my stuff, or actually trades. That's what I prefer to do, is trades for a lot of my work. I do stick and poke tattoo and so tarot reading, and I would never charge for that. It's all just trade. But now, yeah, I do specific things. Like a friend will ask for something and I'll do that for them. So if you're really nice, you can ask me, and if I have some time, I'll make you something. We can trade.
Perfect.
You probably won't get it until next year. Like, probably when my album comes out, you'll get it.
I can wait.
But that's okay. No rush.
Amazing. So what do you have coming up in the next few months, Gina? Are you home in Nova Scotia very much? Do you have any shows in the Maritimes?
Actually, I'm super excited because the Jerry Cans, we are playing the Lunenburg Folk Fest in 2 weeks. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited. Jerry Cans has played Halifax twice, the Carlton and the Seahorse. So they were both later shows and not all ages. So this one, I'm really stoked. My niece and nephew can come. My cousins are coming. My mom, dad, grandparents, like, they're all going to be there, my friends. So it's really special for me to be able to have this group of people who are literally family. I mean, I see the Jerry Cans more than I see my family. To be there with my actual family.
Oh,
and
it's
daytime shows, all ages, festival vibe. So I'm really stoked.
Well, have so much fun. I wish I was going to be in Lunenburg this summer. We'll be sure to mention the dates and times that you're playing. But thank you for coming on the show, Gina. And it was so, so great chatting with you and hearing what you're up to. Best of luck with the touring and the rest of the solo project and the Jerry Cans new record. I can't wait to hear when it all comes out.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that. Appreciate everything the Talent Trust has done for me. I just have to put a shout out for them because I wouldn't be here otherwise. I had a lot of support, not only from the Talent Trust, but from other organizations growing up as a young violinist in Nova Scotia. And I'm just so thankful. So
absolutely.
Appreciate it.
They do amazing work, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Awesome. So this is Gina Burgess. We're going to have a listen to Right in the In-Between by Gypsophilia. Thanks so much for listening to the Artist Spotlight presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust. For more information, or if you're an artist who might want to apply to the Nova Scotia Talent Trust, go to www.nstalenttrust.ns.ca or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Nova Scotia Talent Trust.